Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to The Doubters. This is Thursday, May the 7th, and really glad to have you here. People who've joined us live and people who will be catching up with us on the recording, welcome to you all. I'd like to extend a very special welcome to our guest today, who is joining us from New York, and it's Dara Blumenthal. Would you like to say hello, Dara?
Yes, hello. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Good to see you. Yeah, we were just having a little chat beforehand about the situation in New York, and you're still in lockdown, and things are still a bit strange.
But, yeah, wearing masks and the whole thing.
Yeah, strange situation at the moment, but we're so glad to have you here. Really looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, likewise.
Good. Okay, so for the people who joined us here today, just so you understand the format, what's going to happen, I'm going to introduce Dara now, and then Dara and I are going to have a conversation about this topic today, which is embracing tenderness, I've called it. And we're going to talk about this about half an hour, and then I'm going to open up the at about 20 to 5 UK time for people to come on and make a contribution or ask a question or just share anything that comes to mind. And you don't have to come on the recording, absolutely no pressure to, but we'd love it if you would do, and especially for people who are catching up with the recording, they really appreciate the contributions from people who are here. So I do encourage you to do that. And also, you can contribute through the chat box throughout the recording, throughout our conversation if you want to. We'll pick that up. We will leave some time at the end of the session. I'll turn off the recording. And if you really don't want to come on and talk on the recording, but you'd like to contribute, then you can come on at the end. And hopefully, we'll leave a bit of time for you to be able to do that. And you'd be very welcome. So that's how it's going to run today. Right, so Dara, as I said, is joining us from New York today. This is the third part of this series, which I've called The Strength of Weakness. And it was actually listening to Dara and connecting with Dara that inspired me to do this topic. And she just happens to be the third part because the people I booked were able to come on before. But anyway, it was connecting with her that really inspired me to do this topic. Dara is a developmental coach and an integral facilitator. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. I've got this on your website. And you work with individuals and couples and organizations, and you work with some really, big named global organizations such as GE, American Express, VaynerMedia, PepsiCo. I've just got from your website. So it's really interesting that the work you bring into organizations, and it's going to be really interesting to hear you talk a bit about that. Mm. I like to introduce to people through my connection with them, and I connected with Dara after hearing her on the fantastic Culture First podcast, and I'll put a link to this in the notes from today, this episode. This is a great podcast series for anybody who's interested in organisational culture. And the topic of this podcast was about soft skills, and they were talking about whether we should be rebranding soft skills. This was really the topic of conversation. Because soft skills, not that soft, right? They're actually quite hard. So they were talking about maybe rebranding them as leadership skills. And Dara made a fantastic contribution, which I really appreciated and I really connected with, because she said, when she was approached with this subject about should we rebrand soft skills, she said something like, the fact that that's even a question shows how challenged we are by this word soft. And really how that is a demonstration, an example of how far we are away from just being really whole and allowing ourselves to be whole. And then you went on to talk about how, relating this softness to this tenderness, and how that's such a vital quality. And for me, I really resonated with that. I really appreciated it, and I connected with you and said this because it is really speaks into the work that I'm doing here around self-doubt. One of the biggest challenges I have around this work is that how self-doubt will really introduce us to those parts of ourselves that we consider to be weak and soft and not good enough. And so this is really fundamental about this work, but also how I love working in this area, because this is where there's real beauty and richness and all the creativity comes to light. And yeah, so I just really love working in this area. So that's Dara, and that's my connection with her. Is there anything you want to add to that, Dara?
That was beautiful, and thank you. Yeah, I mean, you really told the story of what I said really clearly. So I don't think I need to elucidate it more, but it's interesting. What I can say is that the fact that we get caught up in these like really conceptual and abstract conversations about something like soft skills, about how to be a human, it just shows us how much we're missing, because it isn't a conceptual problem, right? Being able to relate to ourselves and each other it's not a failing of our conceptuality or our ability to be abstract, which most of us are just in abstract thinking and doing all the time. And so the fact that that's even where the conversation goes, that, oh, the way we can solve this is by changing our concept around it, isn't really ever going to go far enough.
Yeah. So that's kind of, it's almost like taking us away from the challenge or the issue or that kind of that what we're trying to do by bringing in these soft skills, by actually rebranding them as leadership skills. Let's make them leadership skills. It's kind of taking us away from the point of bringing them in, which is about, you know, you talked about being whole and being really human in the workplace. I mean, you know, I know that I'm imagining that, you know, I'm really interested actually in your work around organizations with this and what you're doing there, because, you know, often they are like really, it's really challenging arena, isn't it, for this work? And so why do you think it is such a challenge in organizations? I mean, this could be like, you know, a bit of a silly question, but maybe we'll just explore it a bit. Why is it such a challenge for people within organizations to embrace this stuff?
It's a good question. And I'll say that I might disappoint you a little bit, because I haven't done a lot of organizational work in the last year and a half, 2 years. But I continually get pulled into conversations about organizations.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have like some kind of karma with organizational life, which is fine. You know, I'm trained as a sociologist, and sociology is fundamentally the study of social systems, and organizations are full of social systems. So I guess it makes sense. But just so you know, I don't actually, right now, I haven't for the last 2 years or so done a huge amount of organizational work. The organizational work that I do still is basically having unstructured, open, facilitated conversations. So I help teams have the conversations that they need to have and that they're not having. And then I do work with leadership like duos. Like I'll do coaching work with them to help them build their relationship and things like that. Anyway, the question that you asked, why is it such a challenge? This is a question that can be answered in kind of any number of ways. And I think fundamentally, the one that sort of is front of mind for me right now is just that we're trying to predict and control everything, because fundamentally work is based on a financial dimension, an economic dimension, that hasn't really evolved to know how to treat people differently than a resource. So it's like it's very, very aspirational to actually have a workplace where people are treated other than a totally designable and controllable factor. So even some of the people that I know who are doing the most sort of thoughtful, cutting edge organizational design and development work, they still, you know, run into these conversations, and probably there's a little bit of a bias, maybe even in their own thinking, that, oh, well, if we just design the way that people will interact, then the people will just do it. And that's just not how people are. And that's not how life is. And really, this is a little bit of more like a Buddhist perspective, is that things come together and they fall apart. That is what we can count on. That things are not constant. Things are always changing. And yet we continue to approach our lives as though they are constant, that they are predictable, and that we're not in this constant flux. And the real challenge is that, the challenge, whether it's nihilism or whether it's just being really anxious and feeling out of control, is that you get stuck in that experience. You get stuck in trying to control it, or you get lost in the change. And there's actually a place to approach the whole experience that is stable and that is constant, but it isn't in that toggle, that being thrown back and forth by the waves of experience.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for that. And apologies about the massive assumption I made.
Oh no, that's fine. That's like totally typical.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's maybe because I connected you through that podcast and hearing you talk about this work that anyway, but obviously you do have experience and understanding, I'd say, of the arena. And so it seems to be what you're saying is that it's about challenges about getting beyond these kind of how we're predicting and controlling ourselves. So whether that's in an organization or in like day-to-day life, I guess. And where that takes us. Mm-hmm. And obviously, at the moment with the circumstances we're in, we've been hit with this huge lesson, haven't we, on a global scale, which is, if you're standing back and watching without the anxiety of being involved in all the suffering, which is obviously there, mm-hmm. it's quite fascinating to watch how this has impacted us. And for me, I think one of the things that that I kind of really appreciate is, or I believe, I think, is that actually as humanity, we're quite fragile, really. We're quite fragile, and these systems of control and prediction that we build up, these economic systems, it's been proved it's actually quite fragile. But of course this is our way of trying to have some control. So I guess with that, it's about, for me, what I think is maybe just acknowledging the fact that actually we are fragile, but that's okay. We can still be strong in that fragility. I mean, that doesn't make weird, that doesn't sound weird. And that might help us to actually really break beyond these kind of systems of control and prediction, because actually we've been shown it's an illusion, right?
It's like, die more, learn how to like kill your ego more, continue to like enter into your suffering more, right? All of that is tenderizing work. And as you do that, you actually become much stronger.
And this is my whole concept, I think, about what I'm trying to get across about the strength of weakness. And what I've really discovered in this work is that we do go into these parts that we've really excluded from ourselves, actually. We kept hidden, it's not good enough. And then when we go there, actually just find that the amazing strength that's there. That's one of the main factors that's come through with the people I work with, is a huge amount of courage and strength is taken to deal with this stuff. So maybe just could you tell us a little bit about how you've come into this work? Sort of curious about your background. You would like to share something about that?
This is a good question. It's funny, I've said this so many times, and then just recently it's occurring to me in such a new way, how to answer this question. I think it's like, I want to start all the way kind of at the beginning, of my childhood, which there are a few things that were really, really special and unique about my childhood that not a lot of people are gifted with. One is that my mom is an artist, so I was raised very much in my senses, in my sensory experience. Mm. So like how to look at and appreciate things, especially the natural world, trees and animals and birds, and like my mom knows the Latin name of every flower, like really crazy.
Wow.
So really like being in wonder and in awe through the natural world, but really through my senses, through my embodied experience. And the other really lucky piece is that my parents invited me to make decisions about my life from a very, very young age. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have, other than for me to like go after my happiness, they didn't have an idea of how my life should look. So they invited me to make choices and then would it make those choices become a reality. So from a very young age, I had this very clear understanding of my capacity to manifest or to be self-actualizing or to see how I could impact my life, basically. Mm-hmm. And sure, like I have, you know, like everyone, I have social conditioning from growing up and being in a society and all of those ideas. But it's kind of fundamentally, I've always come back to, well, what is it that I want? And what is it that excites me and interests me and really makes me come alive? Mm-hmm. So that has been a gift because it's meant that I've really fully explored all of these weird things and avenues and aspects throughout my life. So for example, in college, I studied mind, body awareness and identity. So literally it's like half my classes were in the critical theory tradition, looking at identity and self and religion, East and West and the body. And then the other half of my classes being in like, basically in like a dance studio space, dance studio, no mirror, and really just being in the body and being with other bodies in space. So doing activities like kinetic awareness and Alexander technique and Feldenkrais method and breath work and meditation. I just really went for what interested me. And for whatever reason, these are the things that have interested me. How we experience ourselves and how can we access more and richer and like finer attunement into our lived experience.
Right. Yeah, that's fascinating background, really wonderful as you were talking about it. I'm thinking, wow, I wonder what that must have been like. It's like,
yeah,
a complete contrast to my upbringing. But
yeah.
And it sounds like you're kind of, it feels like, and you're on this journey to just keep progressing that knowledge, because I know that fairly recently you started the study of Hakomi, which we spoke about before.
Yeah.
I'd love you to talk a bit about that work, because it sounds really fascinating.
Yeah. And I'll just sort of briefly say, after undergrad, I got a PhD in sociology. I have a master's in critical theory. So already lots of disciplines. And I trained with Diane Mushell Hamilton, who's a Zen master. That was the Integral Facilitation Program. Amazing, amazing group dynamics stuff. And yeah, now I'm in Hakomi. And it's funny, it's like, this is something that people often ask me about. So I'll say that often I'm not looking for workshops or trainings. I'm looking for teachers. I'm looking for people and modalities that really inspire me. And I just am like, how can I get my body in the same room with them, like as much as possible? Mm-hmm. So really, really looking for teachers. And Hakomi is this amazing modality. So it's a mindfulness, somatic, experiential depth psychotherapy.
Okay.
It's called Hakomi. It's a Hopi word. It means how do you relate, or how are you orienting to all realms? And I think it's a modality that was really started like in the 70s in the States, and it's even where I am, like in New York City, it's still relatively nascent and unknown. It's much more popular in other areas. But New York City is still really heavily psychoanalytical. So the tradition is starting to change here. But anyway, Hakomi is such a beautiful method for me because it's this place where I've been able to, so one of the ways that adult developmental psychology talks about how we develop is that we transcend and then we re-include. So right. we leave things in our life and then some years later or some decades later, we kind of come back around and it's visualized as a spiral. So we circle back around from a different level. And that's kind of what Hakomi has been for me, is that I've been able to circle back around to this really, this like really developed awareness and attunement around the embodied experience and how other people are organized in their bodies. And also energetics. So also in college, so for over a decade now, I've been a Reiki master, which I trained in college for. I had a teacher who was like, "Hey, come do esoteric energy medicine with me," and I was like, "Okay, that sounds weird." yeah, it's funny actually. I wasn't gonna do that tutorial with her. I registered for a psychology course instead, and I went to the psychology class and I was like, "Oh, this is not what I want to be doing." It's like I want to come at psychology from a totally different angle. Mm-hmm. And so in Hakomi, it's a practice that's done in mindfulness. Mm-hmm. So we spend time really setting up a mindful state, really slowing down. Like I'm really fast. I'm talking really fast right now, right? So it's like we slow down, and what's really beautiful about the practice is that the way that the practitioner is tracking the client. So the tracking is done at this somatic level, this energetic level, and even sensations that I am experiencing in my body. And then we do experiments. We do these little explorations in a mindful state to see what wants to open up. And the idea is that when you are able to open the body to really kind of tenderize, I'm just going to keep using the word tender, I think, sort of tenderize your attention and your awareness into what you're actually experiencing in the body, you can access unconscious material without having to go through the intellect necessarily. Mm-hmm. This is the way I talk about it. So instead of just staying cognitive and talking, it's like, I noticed when you said this, your eyes went over here. And then we just explore, what's it like for the eyes to go over there and to follow that impulse that's in the body? And then it's like we can get into memories. We can get into whole experiences that didn't get to be lived fully and are still kind of trapped in the body in a way. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful, incredible modality.
Yeah, it sounds incredible. I love the way you're talking about it. And hearing your background, of course, growing up with your parents who you were able to just embody the world. It sounds like that's how you came to the world, through this sensory experience. And I think this is such a challenge, really, for a lot of people nowadays. I mean, particularly I think about my own experience, because I didn't grow up in that kind of environment. I grew up in a household where there was addiction and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that going on, so it's crazy. So I shut mm-hmm. off from all of that at a very young age. So so really getting in touch with all that kind of sensory experience has been a real challenge for me, but I've got quite passionate about it particularly over the last few years, because since I've been coaching. because I realised that actually we're so limited by what goes on up here, aren't we, actually? And I love how you talk about going into the experience really through that, on that somatic level, going in through what we're experiencing in our bodies and subconsciously, I think. Did you say subconsciously? I think, yeah, you did, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's going on? Because, you know, that's the large percentage of our experience, really, of what's going on subconsciously and getting introduced to that. There's quite a contrast with my work, I suppose, with the coaching work I'm talking, you know, and mostly I'm coaching people like this on Zoom, you know, across the screen. And I don't mind that, actually, but I tend to sort of access this area through, when we go through self-doubt, we look at all that, we go into that kind of that murky space and then find out what's beneath it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the idea of going in there, like, and accessing that through the body. Last week I had the guest I had on, we were talking about psychedelics. So he was talking about obviously accessing a different level of consciousness through psychedelics. So I guess it's kind of similar kind of concept, isn't it, but a different method, obviously.
Yeah, it's interesting. And what I can tell you from my personal experience, and I have a lot of experience with plant medicine and psychedelics. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a Hakomi session feels like a journey.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It can totally, it's like you're in a non-ordinary state of consciousness. And it can totally feel, and you can totally access all of these planes of your being, and even transpersonal places, even without the medicine, without the psychedelic.
Mm-hmm.
There's incredible researchers like Stan Grof who have been in this world researching psychedelics and the psyche and psychology and the self for a very long time. And it's something that's sort of coming back into our society right now as even something that can be mainstream. So it's a really, really interesting avenue.
Mm.
But yeah, Hakomi does something similar. And usually it's shorter, but it can be equally as powerful.
I was talking about my experience of family constellations. I don't know if you've ever done any of that work, because that's also accessing a different level of consciousness. And what I love about that is going in, I'm not on anything, right? I'm not on any psychedelics, and there's some really weird stuff unfolding right in front of me.
But
I can't argue with it, because I can know I'm seeing the truth, right?
And
I think in order to get through these kind of filters of society, and like you talked about the economic structures and trying to control our world, you know, if we want to really make progress, I think, in a really healthy way, I think it's really important to understand there's so much, there's a different level of experience on offer that we can explore as human beings. And I'm really passionate about this work.
Mm. I love how you said that.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if it would be appropriate to do a little practice, or I mean, for a few minutes. I don't. Would that be like an appropriate thing to do on here, or a demonstration, or a practice? We've got a few people, or obviously from the recording.
Yeah, I mean, I could just lead a little bit of an exploration into the body and see what shows up, and see if anyone wants to share.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. So what we'll do, maybe we'll do that, and then we'll open up and see if anybody wants to contribute. And then, yeah, we'll see what happens after this. Eh? Maybe let's go there. Let's go to this different level of consciousness and see what we learn.
Yeah. So shall I guide you, and then whoever
Yeah, guide me. Yeah. You do it like you're guiding me, and then people can join in or just watch.
Yeah. Okay, great. So I'm just going to slow myself down. And then just as you're starting to ready yourself, and if it feels available, just closing the eyes, maybe taking some deep breaths in through the nose, out through the mouth. And just starting really simply, relaxing the face, releasing the jaw, and letting your body just orient to the ground, the earth. So letting gravity really pull you into the earth. It's like into the embrace of the mother. And see if you can just let yourself go a little bit more. And if there are any thoughts sort of scattering through the mind, just let them be there. They have all the space they need, and nothing needs to change. And as the breath settles in this new natural space, just let your attention move throughout your body and start to inquire just really lightly, where is the center of me? Where is the center? And just orient to that center place if you find one. And this is the sort of thing that could change day to day. So where is the center of you? And then just as you connect with this center place, just inquire, does this place have any messages for me? Is there any information here that I need to know about? So see if there's some information for you in this center. There could be an image or a color. There could be words or even a memory, a sensation, an emotion. There are really so many ways that we can experience. Just see if there's any information. And just, I'm going to keep this short. I'm going to just give you a little prompt. And so just sort of releasing your attention from that center place. And letting your attention, letting all of your awareness, letting everything that you can just orient into your own internal experience. So letting all of your attention and awareness be inside of you. And I just want you to notice if anything happens all by itself, anything at all, when you hear me say, all of you is welcome here. All of you is welcome here. So I felt a big energetic shift. So I feel like maybe some people are feeling something. So yeah, and why don't we just pause there and see if there's anything you want to report?
Wow. Yeah, that was amazing. I love that. Thank you, Dara. Thank you. And wow. So weirdly, I felt my eyelids going like, is that normal?
It's just something, yeah.
It's just something. Yeah, it was like they were really going, like almost like flickering. And I love the you're tuning in with the center of me. I was really curious about that because you said that might change, and I was like, oh, I wonder what that means, because I could feel it here, right? I could feel it today. It's here,
like in solar plexus.
In
maybe?
My solar plexus, uh-huh. Yeah, it's here today. Yeah. And But I realise in some days it's like really here.
Up in your head.
Oh, God, yeah, quite a lot. But today, I think, so I'll say what was going on for me in that moment, because I've been doing a lot of work just fairly recently, a lot of personal work, and I've been exploring safety as a concept. And this has felt really important related to the self-doubt work, because I realise what a lot of people are looking for, they're not looking for confidence and certainty, they're actually looking for safety. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, so many of us come from a background where we don't really understand what safety is. We don't have a frame of reference for what safety is. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been doing a lot of work around this recently, and actually, as I connected with that place, I felt like it was almost like, yeah, you're safe. I could really feel it at my core, and I could really appreciate it. And so that was really great for me. And I think, you know, it's and sort of connecting what was going on in my inner world, is I really connected with the richness. And I think this is to do with this space around my work that I've created, because I get so excited by this work. And for me, there's so much richness, and this is where my creativity is, right? And this is where I'm exploring and developing, and having this conversation with you today just made me feel really fulfilled. So I was sensing all those lovely feelings, which was just beautiful, right? Because, you know, often it's not like that. Often I'm connecting with, it's anxious, or it's anxiety, or there's something not right, you know. So today was really great to be able to experience that. So thank you.
And what a beautiful resource for you to have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so important. But it's fairly new, to say.
Great.
You know, there's this thing about we do the work that we need to learn, right? You know, totally. So this is why I'm working on self-doubt, because it's my challenge, right?
And
often I'm with my clients, so we're right there together. You know, they're reporting stuff, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is. I get this. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
But yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, really beautiful. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm going to open up now, a little bit earlier than we know when I said I would do, but it feels appropriate. And if anybody wants to come on, and if anybody's got anything to report from the experience we just had with Dara, that would be wonderful. And you can come when you don't have to put your video on. Just unmute yourself if you're willing to do that. You know, as I said before, we will have some time after the session. I invite people to lurk when they come along here, you know, there's no pressure to contribute or to, you know, I really appreciate people's presence when they come along here. So, you know, anyway, we'll leave that space open. It doesn't look like anybody's unmuting themselves right now, but, you know, maybe they will if we stay on a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So Dara, Kevin is unmuting himself. Kevin, lovely. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Let me see if I can.
Oh.
I wouldn't like to be thought of as a lurker.
Oh, we don't mind.
Hi, Kevin.
Hiya, Dara. That was really interesting. Thank you so much. And I think if I can say, you gave a very a positive and helpful way of looking at these life skills, and maybe moving us away from that kind of emotive use of soft. I mean, it has kind of strange connotations for people, and yet it's something really, really positive. But if I could just ask you a little bit of clarification for me, you said, I think, and I made a note of it, a stable approach to life is not found in the waves of human experience, which is a brilliant expression. So I guess my question is, where is the stable approach to life?
So this is a very Buddhist perspective.
That's great.
And the way that, at least the tradition that I practice in, one of the ways that we talk about what can happen by training your mind and your heart and your body is that you can shift your basis of operation. So you can shift your basis of operation from the ego, from this I to something much, much larger. And this is like one of the experiences people often have with psychedelics. But anyway, it's something that can be cultivated in your daily life. So the ability to, and also just say a different way to say it, I think it works. A different way to say it is that it's like you're shifting your subject object relationship. So instead of being subject to all of the changes all the time, you start to develop the capacity to kind of have it at arm's length, like to have, not to be disassociated from it, but to be able to observe it. So you invite that compassionate observer to be online really all the time. And then you don't get caught up in the comings and goings of your life. And ironically, it's, you actually experience more in a way. You experience more connection. You experience more intimacy with what your life is like.
Yeah, and that's very helpful. Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, thank you. That's great.
Sure. Yeah, and it, you know, it's aspirational.
It's a process. It's always a process, and yeah, you kind of go back and forward between the two. I appreciate that. Yeah, but it's a kind of a goal to have in mind.
Thanks for the question, Kevin. I really appreciate that. Thanks for coming on.
All right.
And yeah, just to say, the report, my experience of that is that that compassionate observer or the curious observer, you know, is about being able to observe, or, you know, from a distance, like what's going on in life. And I found that a very powerful perspective to be able to take, which has come about as a part of my meditation practice, really. And, you know, but it's not about, so it is really ironic because it's not about being detached from emotion, which I was for so many years. But actually, you know, I can still experience the emotion, but I can have a context on it while it's going on. And if I'm triggered by something, it's like, oh, okay. Oh, I noticed that really got me. What's going on there then? So it just really gives that, you know, a greater capacity to learn and to, I guess, to integrate, you know, experiences as they happen, because it's so consumed.
Yeah.
Like I say, aspirational, and not like that every day, mostly.
Totally. Yeah. Practice.
Yeah, totally. So Dara, just as we come to the end of the recording here, but not quite to the end of the session, I was just wondering, I'm just going to put it back to you. Is there anything else you'd like to add about this conversation? Anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, there's something, it kind of relates to this question from Kevin that we just had, and also sort of, and your own experience of really being able to take a perspective on what your experience is, or what's going on. And kind of just like arcing back to even the beginning of the conversation, right? This idea of hard and soft, or control versus spontaneity, or uncertainty, or whatever the dialectic is. And even the ability to start to take multiple perspectives on those two categories is a direction in, you know, towards more wholeness, towards more diversity, towards more possibility, right? So much of our world, and you know, maybe this is something we're shifting out of as we go through this, whatever you want to call it, this pressure cooker, or this great pause, or this really wild time that we're all in with the coronavirus, right? So the ability, so, you know, just a really simple example, to move out of the black and white thinking, hard or soft or whatever, right, is to just be able to take even two more perspectives on each of those. So we've gone from two to six. So it's like, with basically the simple way to do it is to say there's an upside and there's a downside to every position. So there's an upside to winning, there's an upside to losing. There's a downside to winning, there's a downside to losing. that we're actually really complex, right? So there can be something really, really kind of not good about being a winner, right? The pressure to keep winning, maybe, right? And there can be something really beautiful about losing, right? The ability to be humble, to really be in your humility and to be wide open and learn. So, I mean, the example I didn't give was on hard and soft or tough and tender, but just to really quickly offer that even the ability to add a couple more perspectives to each side of the discussion or each side to your own experience is actually going to open more possibility.
Yeah. And that sounds like a really powerful but practical exercise, actually, for anybody. And I can imagine that would be really helpful if somebody's in, you know, when we're under a lot of pressure, when we're under a lot of stress, our focus and perspective can become very narrow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can suddenly think, I've got no options available to me here and everything feels consuming. So that perspective you've given there is really opening up that exercise again, is that enables us to really open up that perspective. And then, of course, when we open up, then we have choices and then everything becomes lighter, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. So that's a fantastic exercise. Thank you, Dara.
Sure.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, and I think, you know, ultimately the object is about becoming whole, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And you talked about wholeness, diversity, and of course with that, that's strength, that's the stability, isn't it? We were just talking about.
Yeah.
That's what we're exactly. Wonderful. Okay, Dara, thank you so much for joining us today. So just to finish off here, what are you available for people? Where can people contact you, find out more about you if they want to do that?
Sure. I work with individuals. I work with couples, whether that's romantic couples or work couples, people who work together. And sometimes I do work with groups, but, you know, right now in the time that we're in, I'm mostly doing individual and couple work and virtually. And really, I'm just someone who's really open and I love to hear from people. So even if someone just wants to have a conversation with me, they're welcome to get in touch. I don't know. What's the easiest? My name, DaraBlumenthal.com, or my business is called Soma Developmental, Soma like somatic. SOMA developmental.com. They bring you to the same place. And my email address I'm happy to give is hello@darablumenthal.com. And I'm sure you can find out how to spell my name.
Yeah. I will put links to everything in the email. I'll send out the recording tomorrow with links to all of this in the email anyway. So,
okay, great. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that, Dara. Okay, so just before I turn off the recording, just to say, thank you once again for people who've joined us here. Do stick around after the recording. We'll have some space if anybody wants to come on and contribute there or ask a question. And next week, I'm going to be doing a little solo episode. I thought I'd do a solo episode really just to open up the space a bit, give people opportunities to contribute, to ask questions, which you can do via my website, oliviadesilva.com/doubters-contribution. And I will put that link in the email too. So you can ask a question or share something or tell me where self-doubt is showing up in your life. But the subject of what I'm going to cover next week is how self-doubt is the hallmark of authenticity.
Mm.
Right, so we're going to talk about that. So I hope you will join me next week and I look forward to that.